Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Monday, January 23rd, 2017. The time is 9:03 a.m. If you're joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, in the Capitol, on the fifth floor, room 532. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Good morning.
And I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. And before the committee today is a presentation from David Teal, the Director of Legislative Finance Division, as well as Megan Wallace, an attorney for the Legislative Legal Division. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to invite Megan Wallace to the microphone, and if you would, Megan, welcome to Finance. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, and then please provide us some opening comments.
For the record, my name is Megan Wallace, Legislative Counsel with Legal Services. David will give a little bit of rundown on the specific intent language that was found in the operating budget, but I wanted to present kind of a little bit of a legal background behind the intent language. From a legal perspective, when it comes to intent language, the biggest problem is that most intent language is not enforceable. Article 2, Section 13 of the Constitution, also known as the Confinement Clause, requires that bills for appropriations shall be confined to appropriations. So that prevents the legislature from taking action in an appropriation bill that would have the effect of either amending existing law or enacting new law. The Supreme Court in the 2001 Knowles decision specifically applied the Confinement Clause to language in the budget and adopted a five-part test for substantive contingencies relating to appropriations. Most intent language will violate at least one part of this test. That test requires that qualifying language in the budget must be, one, the minimum necessary to explain the legislature's intent regarding how money appropriated is to be spent. Second, it cannot administer the program of expenditures. Third, it cannot enact new law or amend existing law. Four, it cannot extend beyond the life of an appropriation. And fifth, it must be germane. So when it comes to intent language, my advice usually is that if the legislature wants an agency to submit a report or undertake a study, the best thing to do is to provide for that in substantive law. Otherwise, intent language requiring a department to do something that they're not legally obligated to do otherwise would be contrary to the Knowles test, and you'd likely get an opinion that mandating that in a budget bill is not enforceable or legally binding.
Thank you. Ms. Wallace, could you just run through the five again? I caught four of them,
oh,
but I missed
sure.
one in the middle. So you were moving fast, and it's second nature for you. But for those of us who are not attorneys, we just want to capture it well. And the reason, just so that we can lay a bit of foundation, and we did have originally on the schedule Mr. Teal first, but we wanted to make sure that Ms. Wallace can get back to her job, and hers might be just a bit shorter presentation than Mr. Teal's. But we have 10 full pages of legislative intent that the legislature inserted into last year's appropriation bills. And the number of intent language requests is moving upward, not downward. And so I thought it appropriate to at least have a conversation about the intent language and the legislature's responsibility when they insert language, as well as the administration's either compliance with our requests or lack of compliance for different reasons. So there's a purpose of why we're discussing it. We should be very careful with language that we're inserting into our appropriation bills. And with that, if you could go through the confinement test again, there were five parameters.
Mm-hmm. Sure. The qualifying language cannot be, one, the minimum necessary to, it needs to be the minimum necessary to explain the legislature's intent regarding how money is to be spent. Second, it cannot administer the program of expenditures. Third, it must not enact law or amend existing law. Fourth, it may not extend beyond the life of the appropriation. And fifth, the language must be germane.
Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chair, so that's if it's confined to the appropriation, what would happen if there was just a separate bill divorced of the appropriation that had its own intent language as was voted on by the, for example, by the legislature as a whole? We put this in our finance committees and subcommittees through that work, but if it was broken out of the appropriation bill, how would that change the, I guess, the view of it?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I think that if there was a request to put intent language into substantive form, it would likely be the recommendation that it be drafted so that it's put into law in the department for which whatever the intent is for, and so that it can be enacted in a way that either mandates a department to do something or an agency or to submit a report. And so we would be able to craft that for you or another legislator so that it's put in the proper place and can be enforceable and carried out by the administration.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Ms. Wallace, so I guess what you're saying is that it couldn't really be an omnibus bill. It would, or could it be? I mean, say that we took all of our intent language and could we have this large bill that had the intent language that we wanted in the budget for each section in the same bill?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, likely not. The appropriation bills are exempt from the single subject rule, but a substantive bill would be bound by the single subject.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the confinement test and intent language? And certainly the administration has, to my knowledge, tried to respond, or the industries that are affected are trying to respond to our request. Sometimes that request could be made in a formal letter from the finance committees or from an individual legislator to acquire the same information, but it is a higher level of attention from my perspective when we place it in the operating budget or in an appropriation bill. But it does cause our finance team to track it, and it has some other expenses that we need to be aware of as we're moving forward into these tough financial times, so we should use it with discretion. 10 pages this year with at least 7 items on each page, it looks like, if not more. So 70 different pieces of request outside of the actual appropriation. Anything else, Ms. Wallace?
I don't have anything else.
Thank you for your service to our state and assistance to the Finance Committee. Mr. Teal, if I could ask you to approach the microphone, identify yourself for the record, and walk us through last year's requests or those that we may need to highlight.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance. And I know you're trying to make a point when you say we have 10 pages of intent. True, that's a condensed version of it. We had 55-page memo and decided that no one really wanted to read that, so we tried to condense it and did that into a 10-page spreadsheet. And, of course, we do this every year. We ask agencies whether they've complied with the intent included in the appropriation bills. We then compile their responses in a memo, and as you can see, the intent memo has grown and grown over the years, and now has this year 55 pages, 84 items. And the point of this review is really to draw attention to the intent that was not fully complied with. So we've done that by color coding on this spreadsheet. You should have that in your packet. You probably have the memorandum itself as well. So on that color coding, no color indicates what we consider to be full compliance. Orange indicates our belief that the agency did not comply with the intent, and yellow indicates partial compliance, or in some cases, we just didn't know what the intent meant and couldn't make a decision whether they complied or not. Or that regardless of the status of compliance, that this committee or the subcommittees may be interested in hearing more about that intent. So the sheet in front of you states the intent. It contains our abbreviated response to it and our comments. And I'll just walk through that sheet quickly today, referring only to the colored items. If you have questions on the non-colored items, that's fine. But the in theory, you or your staff can review the sheet more fully on your own time. Mark it for discussion at the subcommittee level, or if you prefer, circle it, an item, mark it so that one way or the other get back to Laura Kramer, your staff, and so that she could schedule a hearing with the agency in front of the full committee. A few remarks before we start the spreadsheet. There's probably too much of it. Intent and legal services, Megan Wallace addressed that. And of course, I think you all know that it's intent language and not enforceable. A couple things here though. If we're expected to continue to do this review on an annual basis, I think it would really help if the legislature, in writing the intent, replaced report to the secretary or the clerk or the House.
Mr. Teal, if I could, during the regulation review process, Legislative Council just had last week, we discussed that exactly, and Senate Finance will be introducing a bill to direct where globally reports will go to, just as you're asking
okay.
us to do. So
wonderful.
We understand it's an issue, and we will, and I have met with Representative Neil Foster briefly, and he'll be reviewing similar legislation on his side of the House.
Good. Thank you. Because we don't necessarily get the reports now. They go to the President, the Speaker, various places, and if we could be the clearinghouse for that, it would make it easier. When intent is added, it would be nice if it were as clear as possible. Much of this intent, we don't know what it means. There are several ways to interpret it, and it does no good for us to ask the legislator that drafted the language what it meant, because what it means to him is not necessarily what it meant to all of you. So it was adopted by the legislature, but we don't know for sure what people were voting on or think they were voting on. And then last is that determining compliance is not an easy decision. We may have differing opinions in legislative finance, and you may disagree with our conclusions. So page one offers some examples of the remarks I just made. And again, starting with item two, which is the first yellow, meaning partial compliance, or we didn't know. It was supposed to find an alternative to Alaska Land Radio, mobile radio network. They did not find an alternative. They put out a request for information and cited six previous studies, none of which found a viable replacement for the radio system. Right under that, it's a white one, but I think I should mention this because it says the intent of the legislature that DM, Department of Motor Vehicles, seek out efficiencies. That one's white. They complied. And there's the difference between find an alternative and seek an alternative. So when you say find, that's easier for us to make a decision. Seek, they did look, but they didn't find. So we say they complied. Item number four is that Commerce and Economic Development set license fees for boards approximately equal to the cost of regulation for each board. They've made tremendous progress and continue to make progress on that. However, there are still 20 of 40 boards that do not meet that intent, or actually that law, since it is in law, and the intent in this case was just say, please follow the law. Number five, again, is a Commerce and Economic Development, this time relating to tourism marketing. And it says, come up with or develop a plan to phase out unrestricted general funds for tourism marketing and present that plan and go to a self-sustaining finance plan. Well, in FY17, funding for tourism marketing was $1.5 million of UGF. In 18, that request is out of the operating budget, put in the capital budget at $1.35 million of UGF, plus vehicle rental taxes of $1.65 million. So UGF is down, but total GF is up. We don't know whether they really meant UGF or whether they meant state funds when you vote on this. One way or the other, the industry plan calls for an $8 million assessment on industry, which is the self-sustaining portion of the plan. It also calls for using $10.8 million, I think it's $10.5 million, of motor vehicle rental taxes, which, of course, is being spent by other agencies for other purposes, mostly related to tourism development. So their plan actually would take money from agencies that are using it now, switch it to tourism, leaving you to either have less money in those other agencies or to backfill those agencies with unrestricted general funds. Number six is related to the Marijuana Control Board. They were supposed to set fees to recover not just current costs, but also to recover past unrestricted general funds spent on setting up the board. They did not do that, but there's a good reason. Their fees were set before the intent was adopted. Going to page two, item 15 is Department of Education. It's the aquatics facility at Mount Edgecombe, and the intent was that they find other sources of money to operate that pool. They weren't able to identify sources of revenue sufficient to open the pool. And so this statement is perhaps a little off. It may imply that the increment of $100,000 of UGF was to open and operate the pool. It really isn't quite so simple. It's to maintain an empty pool, the $100,000 increment. They cannot open it or will not open it if they're complying with this intent to find alternative sources, rental and city fees, that sort of thing. Item 17 asks Department of Education to please turn to AHFC, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, for energy efficiency loans. The department explored that loan option but believes it won't meet the needs of very many applicants, so they're really not doing it.
Mr. Page, we do have questions when you finish with that explanation. Back on the previous one, I believe, Senator Von Imhoff.
About Mount Edgecombe's pool. Mm-hmm. So the pool is currently empty right now? It's not operating?
I believe the pool is complete but empty, through the chair, and that they will maintain the empty pool because they have no funds to operate it.
So, and then one follow-up through the chair. Is there another pool in Sitka right now that they could use?
There is. I think the city or the school district has a pool.
Are they using it?
Yes, they are.
Other questions? Senator Machicki.
Just a
Quick one. Thank you, Madam Chair. David, I don't know if you can answer this or not, but how does the process work? How is intent language communicated to the departments? And where would you say that the intent language sits on their priority list as they're executing their daily duties?
Through the chair, it's an interesting second question to that. The intent language goes in the one of the appropriation bills. That's how it's communicated to them. They have it. We ask them, starting in November or December, how they're doing regarding compliance. But what you're really asking is how seriously they take it. As Megan Wallace said, it is unenforceable. That doesn't mean they don't attempt to follow it. They do, because they know perfectly well that they have to come back here the following year. So intent is particularly important when you have the same subcommittee chairman that you had the same year. In other words, during the same legislature, intent probably carries more weight than it does during an election year when subcommittee chairs may be different. But they don't know. I believe that departments attempt to comply with intent to the best of their ability, but there are many reasons, including lack of funding, that they do not comply.
Thank you.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Some have said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. My question, I guess, would be, why do this way? If there's another way to do it, should we think that through? I've got notes all over my paper saying you can't tie the hands of a future legislature, you can't do this. If you, even when you do something, sometimes it doesn't happen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess my question through the chair would be, maybe it's rhetorical. This is good feedback. There are going to be some folks that will look at this particular packet here and say, why are we still giving certain agencies money if they're not going to do certain things, or if we have a swimming pool that's Olympic size that's not being used, et cetera, because we're going to be on the verge of potentially taxing people or otherwise doing something with revenue, and they're going to look at this and wonder if the legislature is trying to put together intent language to affect things, but there have been court cases and rulings that seem to indicate that we really can't do that, and that maybe it's really paid attention to during certain years when certain chairmen are in place, but after that, maybe not. How do we affect change in the manner that we want to affect it through this intent language and actually make it happen, is the question. If not, we look like we're just being somewhat placated or pacified to an extent.
Senator Dunleavy, it's a conversation that we need to have and an analysis and solution that we need to come up with together. We have numerous questions at the end of any given year. The time is short with 90 days to acquire the information from the administration. Some of the requests are studies. Some of them are political in nature, trying to push a particular position. One item I'd like to put for clarity on the record is the swimming pool is not built yet. In Mount Edgecombe, that the exterior is due to go to be issued on February 10th. We had a memo on that right when we got into session, so hard to follow all those things. But it's getting ready to go out for construction, and we can't stop it. Some people, I sent out a news bulletin that we were back in session and received multiple responses from people who sign up for Senator Anna McKinnon's news briefing or bulletin. There is a difference between a capital appropriation and a operating appropriation. That's the first difference. And state government is very different than local government when it comes to funds. And so if you're at home listening and you're watching specifically in Eagle River a road being plowed, You may not know whether it's a state grader or a local grader. What's important to my constituent is that their house just got plowed under by a berm, or that the road didn't get plowed. But for us, it's much more complex. We have to determine whether it was a local grader that went by and just buried you, or whether it indeed was a state responsibility of our road or under a memorandum of understanding. And so all of these things are very complex, and so is the answer to this particular problem. And we need to look at it because we are generating a workload right now that does have value when it comes back to us, but does it have the best value for the use of our legislative legal? Is it the best value of use for our legislative finance team? Is it so important that we want to maintain a high level of legislative intent, or do we need to ask our colleagues, which I would suggest we should send this particular sheet out to all of our committee chairmen in both bodies, and that those committees of policy jurisdiction, either through a subcommittee process or through a policy committee process, see if it's important enough to acquire more of the administration's time to answer the question. Because when we're putting it in the budget, our ledge finance team, as you've heard expressed today, is tracking it at our request, and that is using their time in the fall when they are trying to, as an example, the governor doesn't put his budget on the table until December 15th. They're scrambling. They are not on vacation. They are trying to understand what the governor is presenting to the legislature and have that aqua book put together so that we can do our work to the best of our ability. And so it's important that we know what the responses were from the administration when a legislator asks a question. And we have created a way to audit that right now that Mr. Teal is going through. And it is important. These, all of these issues are important, and they highlight the tension that is supposed to be there under our Constitution between three branches of government. And so we are the appropriators. It's our responsibility to know and explain to our constituents how the money is spent. But they are spending that money under the 11 and 21 rule that I call Alaska state statute that had 21 House members in agreement, 11 senators in agreement, and one governor. So some of these things will require actual statutory change to accomplish some of the positions that are out there. And I would welcome input from other senators in regards to this, but I'm just saying it's quite the report, and because we're in a tight fiscal situation, I expect more people to have more questions that will require more answers, and is that the best use of the administration's time in some of the questions? Some of the questions are very valuable and need a more thorough understanding and communication and possible statutory change to accomplish what the appropriators would like to see happen. Any other comments from senators? Senator Michicki.
Just a brief one, Madam Chair, just kind of in response to you. It's clear that, so as you said, this budget bill was, and the source of this intent language was approved by the Senate, the House, and the governor. But that's very different than the ability for that policy to pass if it were not simply intent language, right? I mean, I just, an example is the item number 1 that talks about combining the information officers. Well, if the governor understands that it's intent language only, he's not willing to veto that section. However, if a bill comes to him where the legislator says you will combine those positions, it's likely to be vetoed. So it certainly doesn't pass the same test, right? But it's something we're going to have to consider as we get serious on these reductions, that if we want intent language to become law, it's going to have to be a very separate and very intentional process to not just send a message, but have it be a requirement of
Senator Michicki.
Moving forward.
Senator Dunleavy.
Maybe building on what Senator Michicki said, but it's We're going to be asked to appropriate more money, and for the first time in decades, maybe out of the traditional source of oil revenue. And when you get a report like this, and there's other reports that come along, what it indicates to some people, at least, is that there's a lot of there's some slop or some waste or some lack of execution, let's say, from the intent of the legislature all the way down. And we understand that it's difficult because there have been budgets reduced and so forth. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is as we try and tighten things up to make sure things work as well, we're being asked to come up with large sums of money to make the overall government work. We're looking at some of the parts of government to try and get them to work better. And I'm just, you know, I agree that we have to decide if this is a good use of anybody's time, but how do we, and we'll have to go through this process and I'll wrap it up, but how do we become more effective at doing our job, and how does the administration become more effective at doing their job so that in the end we're not asking for more money from the people of Alaska to pay for a government that's that may be viewed by some as having a difficult time executing what they already have. So anyway, it's just, I think the conversation will obviously continue.
Senator Dunleavy, I think that's fair on the issue of Mount Edgecombe. Let me give you an example. In the reappropriation process last year, as the capital budget chairman, my team looks, the legislative finance under the supervision of Rob Carpenter look and see what items, what projects have remaining funds on them and what projects could we recall into the state treasury. And I have generated for the last 2 years a letter out saying no reappropes. All of it is coming back to the treasury. And you should not be reappropriating money to other areas because, folks, this is all hands on deck. Alaska is in a tough time, and we need to reassess whether those are the highest and best funds. Traditionally, in Alaska, we have allowed the funds that were generated into a geographic region to stay in that region because they were hard-fought battles in other areas of the budget. And certainly I would look to Senator Hoffman to provide feedback if I don't get this just right. And this is just one perspective. And so communities are advocating to maintain those dollars in their region even if they can't maintain the projects. And so for 2 years, we've rolled all of those funds and collected them back to reallocate in what this legislature or those elected officials deem the best use of that money. In the issue of the pool at Mount Edgecombe, we have not been able to gather enough support to draw that money back in and not reappropriate it. We didn't last year, and that project is moving forward under money that was appropriated years ago. And sometimes those projects take years to get on the books. I can't speak to the validity of putting a second pool in that region. I certainly, as a representative of Eagle River, Alaska, Jaybear, Chugiak, Highland, Peters Creek, we don't see that as a highest and best use of $10 million that's getting ready to go into construction. But I would just point out that Mount Edgecombe and the people of Sitka, Ketchikan, and others might not see a bridge improvement that we allocated $40 million for Matsu, Palmer, and my community to be able to access into the Anchorage area to go to work. They might not see that as a valuable use of money. And so there's this regional push and pull about different members advocating. And again, it comes down for this committee to 11 and 21. And I look to you to be fair to all regions of our state in doing that. And when we highlight areas that from my community would be seen as something that we should take back and reallocate, it's on me to tell my community that something is important to someone else that might not be as important to us. And so I will cast my vote appropriately if that issue comes before us for the people that I represent. But you know, we have a new body that we're working with, and it's difficult to pull those back. And that's just one example. I don't mean to highlight Mount Edgecombe in the pool, but that has been a point of contention for many regions of Alaska with that particular region. And And it's difficult. The people who advocated for that are very protective, just like in other areas. I apologize. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Sort of a general thought and comment. We have programs and then we have projects, and it may be thoughtful to look at some of the projects when, after they're built, how are they going to be operated? So when there's capital appropriations in the past, did we think a couple steps beyond that? Once it's built, what's the plan? And I say this because when the Denali Commission had a great deal of money several years ago and built several health clinics around the state, it was a wonderful thing. Communities needed these frontier clinics that Senator Stevens called them. But many of them are struggling to operate at this time. And I'm fearful, staying on the subject of the pool, that once the pool is built, that it will suffer. And it could suffer. And I know that we're also experiencing deferred maintenance in many of the buildings that exist today. So the last comment is, does it make sense then to create a new rubric by which we evaluate particular projects around the state and see whether what would year three and year four look like? And under that guise, perhaps reappropriation may make sense, or just merely putting it on the back burners for a few more years.
Senator Von Imhoff, on the pool specifically, that conversation was had, and we did have a thorough discussion on that, at least when I took over the chairmanship of the capital budget. I met with the affected parties and was told that there would be no operating impact to the state. I understood that pools were very expensive to maintain and that there were specifically ADA needs and other higher needs at Mount Edgecombe than a pool. But I was assured that there would be zero impact or minimal impact to the state's operating budget when that pool was brought online, that their Coast Guards would help pay for it, the city would help pay for it, and others. So again, I don't want to hijack one project as an example, but I think that that I'd be happy to work with you on setting up a rubric to view projects as we go forward. In the past, it has been a decision of this committee whether any projects go forward. And so that criteria for this committee, the finance teams to adopt, would be beneficial to the people of Alaska. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, my original question had to do with David Teal, but let me just comment on the intent of the pool there in Sitka. I'm not there to defend what the operating costs and whatever else that goes on there, but it was specifically put in place to try and address the large number of drownings that were happening in rural Alaska, because many of those rural students do come to Sitka, and there's most of them, 90% of them, don't know how to swim, and this was a place that they were going to specialize or focus on that to try and make sure that they had instructors and those things. But that's not what I really want to ask about. We're here to look at intent language, and I'd like to ask David Teal, who's, you know, a respected person, been around for a long time, certainly predates me here, and you were here when the price of oil was way down and we were trying to figure out things, or the legislature was trying to figure out their ways, and then we've obviously come to the time where I started when Governor Knowles was in place, and the tension that was between administration and the legislature, you know, was pretty thick. I mean, there was even talks of impeaching him at one point, as I remember, related to other things. Then later on, we had Senator Dyson try and put efforts forward to try and get in enforce intent language. I guess as you look back on that to your beginning years, what efforts have been out there and which ones have been successful in trying to get where we are trying to go today? Do you have any suggestions on what we can do to try and make sure that, you know, because what all they see is numbers. What I'll see, they see is numbers, and intent language kind of goes is a suffix to what they have, and they go ahead and spend it from there.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think you have to look to what Megan Wallace said on that. That first, it should be the minimum necessary to explain the intent of the appropriation, meaning, and that ties in with her second point, it shouldn't administer the program. So if there's a specific appropriation, you can say, here's what we intend you to do with that money. But it shouldn't go beyond that and try to tell them to do something with the money they already have. You're then stepping over the line and administering their program for them. They have broad responsibilities and flexibility to choose what they do with the money you appropriate them, to them.
Madam Chair, just a comment.
Senator Olson.
So are we wasting our time here trying to discuss this whole intent language business because we're hamstrung because of the 5 points that came under the Knowles decision?
Through the chair, I don't believe you're hamstrung. I believe that less intent may be more effective than more intent, and that there's simply so much of it there that an agency may say, you're telling us how to run our programs. That's what we're supposed to decide. And if you have a specific new appropriation for something, then tell us how you want us to spend that money. But don't try to take and carve out a chunk of money to do something unless you're going to give us specific additional funds to do that.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Teal. Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just might. 2 cents following Senator Olson, just everything's debatable. We've had 84 topics here of discussion on intent language, and 44 of those have been deemed a passing grade. That would common sense would tell me that A, the administration liked those 44. You got 17 that are in the caution area. Doesn't mean that, you gave your observation. So now, let's say those are still in play. Maybe by the end of the year, those are over into the white column. And now, we're bumping 70% of the 84. And we got 11 that are in the orange. So, and we heard what Megan said. And, just talking out loud, maybe that's where you focus your efforts on the 11. As a committee going forward. So, and the last thing I had, Madam Chair, if I may, is just a curiosity for me, don't need the answer now, is just how much time does it take for your staff to compile this information? Thank you.
Senator Bishop, through the chair, good points. Most of this is white, meaning that agencies do comply with most of the intent. That said, a lot of what they comply with is easy. They already do it. You're telling them to do something they already do. Those are real easy. Some of the orange, the meaning did not comply, there are very good reasons they didn't comply. And so I look at it as this isn't a condemnation of the executive branch for failing to follow what the legislature wanted them to do. It's actually not so bad. I think what the chairman wanted, and I don't know, put words in your mouth, Madam Chair, but it's there's gotten to be an awful lot of intent. Much of it is unclear, and that simply having a discussion like this will focus your attention on getting intent that's clearer and more meaningful into the appropriation bills.
Thank you, Mr. Teal. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was following that same path, but just a suggestion for the capital and operating chairpersons to possibly request a guidance document from Ledge Legal and Ledge Finance on what effective intent language might look like that passes the five-part test. It might trim this down to something more meaningful and something that actually may hold up as being something more than intent.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. We certainly can do that. The reason we're talking about it early in the session is because when we hit the bumps in the road at the end of session, when the other body is advocating for their position versus ours, many members come to the co-chairs of the finance committees on both bodies with pieces of paper that are their ideas that they want to come forward. And so I'm asking for your help in prioritizing what we might place instead of having 80-plus items that, as Mr. Teal suggested, if there were only 40 or 20, that they may be a little bit more effective if we choose a little bit carefuler language. So as you contemplate intent language going forward in the waning days of the session, so trying to be proactive today, in the waning days of session, think of the four-part or the five-part test, and then ask yourself whether a memo or a letter directly from your office or the chairman of the Committee of Jurisdiction might be as effective as language inserted in the capital or the operating budget. But we are absolutely happy to consider those things because sometimes it's just unavoidable not to do it when we find something that that is brought to the attention of the legislature that has the magnitude that we believe we need to hear from the administration. So good point, Senator Michicki. Mr. Teal, please continue with the project overviews and the requests from last year's budgets.
Thank you. We're on page 3, item 22, Department of Fish and Game. And there the intent was that they should avoid any reductions to personnel or funding that affects stocks of concern, that relates to fish stocks of concern. And what happened was that there were budget reductions in 17, and so the two projects addressing stocks of concern were deleted from their project list. Item 24, again, Fish and Game, directing them to conduct baseline migration projects, and their response was that they did not plan to establish baseline run or baselines due to the cost of the programs. Number 25 was having materials that the Fish and Game Board would discuss available to the public 60 days in advance. They attempt to do that in the past. They will continue to make to attempt to get that out to the public. Page 4, items 30 and 31 are really very closely related. They're Fish and Game items again, where the intent was directing them to look at the ways they survey fishermen, and Fish and Game's response that is that altering their survey techniques would cost a lot of money and that the quality and quantity of data might suffer with those changes. Now, here's one that could be, that is white on your sheets, and that's because it actually says evaluate. And they did evaluate. They just decided that they wouldn't do it. So it appears as white on your sheets. You could just as easily say they did not comply. It's orange.
Orange.
What number is that?
The 33.
That's 31 and 32. Number 33, oops, that's 30 and 31. And 33 then goes to Office of the Governor, and that's the one Senator Michicki noticed where the intent of the legislature was that information officers be consolidated in the governor's office. They did not comply. Item 38 refers to attempts to privatize certain services, and all agencies looked at that. I don't believe they actually compiled a report, but each of the agencies has its own report or the ability to talk to subcommittees about their progress on that subject. Moving to page 5, again, Governor's Office on number 39 relates to co-location of several state corporations, Energy Authority, Aerospace, Housing Finance Corporation, and the ADA, the Industrial Development and Export Authority. They're working on that. They have left the Aerospace Corporation out of it, but I think they're working on Energy Authority, ADA, and AHFC co-locating in a single building. It hasn't happened yet, but they're working on it. Item 40 talked about transferring the management of the and investment responsibility of the Budget Reserve Fund, usually known as the CBR, out of Treasury and over to the permanent fund. They did not do that. To page 6, item 44, was a capital budget item and specifically related to construction of some roundabouts at Chena Hot Springs. It said, don't use any general fund money for it. Again, we have no idea, since most transportation projects are funded with match funding, whether that meant don't do the roundabouts, because if we take the general funds away, you won't be able to do them, or whether this was just a normal process where they could use 100% federal funds. In any event, the roundabouts they're not constructed yet, but they're planned, designed, and will go with 100% federal money. Item 47 and 48 turn to health and social services, and in both of those cases, one is Nome, one is Ketchikan, was talking about repurposing those youth facilities. In both cases, the facilities were closed instead of repurposed. Item 50 and 51, again, similar, it was charging for services by first public health nurses and then the health laboratories. The response was it would require a large investment. They evaluated, said we really can't do it under current billing systems, and it would take an investment in IT resources and other things to get that underway. Skip quite a bit and go to page 8, item 62. Relates to VPSOs, Village Public Safety Officers, and holding down the indirect costs. On that item, it may appear that there was an intent to hold the indirect cost rate to under 30%. The language actually was intended to work the opposite way, by saying you can go with 30% average. That allowed some contractors to have indirect rates much higher than 30%. Item number 67 was Department of Transportation, and they wanted savings at rural airports. They took the intent into account, but you may notice the 18 budget contains no reductions there. In item 68, DOT was directed to open and staff 3 maintenance stations, and the funding for that was vetoed. They did not comply. Marine Highway System on the next page, number 69, wanted a consolidation of cost of living differentials, and they can't do that without statutory change. Going to 70, well, all the university ones, beginning at 74 and going through 81, a number of efficiencies. The university's directed to look at their programs, their campuses, their organization, all things that I believe they were doing anyway. They're all still in progress. The only one where I'd say there's any clear failure to comply is item 82, and that's where they were supposed to reduce personal services across the board or through furloughs, and because of bargaining agreements, they say they're unable to do that. So, again, that's the review of what we said were the yellow and orange on your sheets, and I guess I would urge you to look at the departments that are your subcommittee assignments and see if you want to look at anything further than I've talked about today.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Not a question, Madam Chair, just a statement. I know that being around, I've used legislative intent pretty sparsely, but the problem that I see this year is different than in past years. On Thursday, we're going to be at the 10% mark of this legislative session. The concentration of the legislature this year, I believe, should not be placed strictly on the operating budget. We're trying to get through the operating budget, which has more importance than the intent. And if we can get through that process in a short order, we will be leaving more time to address what we're down here to face, which is the $3 billion deficit, to get tied down in the minutia of things in legislative intent and other issues. I think is going to be a mistake. It's good to review legislative intent we've had, but I plan on trying to give direction to subcommittees, first of all, to minimize any legislative intent, and second of all, to try to get through the budgetary process, and I think that's what our caucus has been trying to do as quickly as possible. The problem in the past has been the just to look at where we are today. The Senate is proposing to reduce the budget by some $300 million. Many people say that is a large sum, but the problem facing us has been well pointed out by our governor is that we have over a $3 billion budget. The attention, time and attention to achieve a $300 million budget, which is 10% of the problem, and we spend 90% of our time addressing that, and only 10% of our time addressing a $3 billion hole needs to be reversed, if at all possible. So what I feel every single day we need to focus upon and bring to our attention is why we're down here. Look at things. It's not to say that we can't multitask and do several things at the same time, but our most valuable time spent down here, even though I'm in charge of the operating budget, is not the operating budget. The problem is trying to address our fiscal dilemma that is classified as a crisis situation by our governor. So I'm guilty of putting in legislative intent in last year's budget. But again, we need to keep focused on why we're down here, particularly this year when our reserves have went from over $16 billion in reserves down to right around $3 billion. The crisis is before us, and we as the Finance Committee have an additional burden upon us to make sure that gets accomplished. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Mr. Teal, in response to Senator Hoffman's statement, we've had the percentages for UGF formula-driven programs before. Do you know those off the top of your head? How much of our budget is in formula programs. And what that is code for is it's written in Alaska state statute that requires 11 and 21 or a veto-proof majority to change. Can you tell me how much of the money that we expend inside of the operating budget is formula?
Madam Chair, it's roughly 50%. And as you know, almost all of that is the K-12 formula education, and that's about $1.3 billion, and Medicaid is the bulk of the rest of it at 600 and some million, and there's maybe another 100 million in various other formula programs.
So in a $4.4 billion budget, if 50% of it is off the table, we're down to $2 billion that we can touch for a $3 billion deficit?
Yes.
So how we – so again, I just go back to the bulletin that I sent out with folks who are responding from my hometown that I very much respect and appreciate. That is the crux of the problem. If we can't pass a piece of legislation to change or reform the programs that we're working in, whether I support them or not, I'm left with a $3 billion budget shortfall. We, as Alaskans, are left with a $3 billion budget shortfall with only $2 billion to work from to even look to reduce. So it is complex. I appreciate all of my constituents who are engaging in this process. My goal is to engage members in the Senate and the other body to try to hit home this particular dilemma that you have to work together and that we have to come up with an 11 and 21 majority to pass legislation, which is what Senator Hoffman in a very eloquent way is pointing to have conversations about that versus potato chips. We can look at small items, and absolutely they're necessary to make sure those potato chips are priced appropriately. But the potato chips will not solve the challenges that we face, but they are an important highlight as the tip of the iceberg on how government sometimes doesn't react how it should. Senator Hoffman.
And the other point that I forgot to mention is that the time frame that we have, Thursday, we're going to be 10% of the way through the session on a 90-day session, and that's how fast time flies. So it's amazing that on Thursday we will have gone through 10% of this regular 90-day session.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, and we're very grateful that Director Pitney has been in the audience for those 9 days, listening to our conversations as the FY18 budget is rolling out, presenting to us, as well as Mr. Teal and his staff and other members of the legislature, both in the room and following from their offices. So I appreciate everyone's participation. Senator Hoffman is absolutely correct that we need to focus our attention on the larger structural deficit that Alaska is facing and legislation that can change the outcome of that particular pit that we find ourselves in. Any comments before we adjourn for today? On tomorrow's agenda, I don't see a notice of a brief at ease. We're back on the record. Any closing comments from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, on tomorrow's agenda, we have a report from the Alaska Travel Industry Alliance. It's stemming from this particular report that we heard from today about the meeting the intent language from last year and what that industry is trying to do to reduce their dependency or reliance on unrestricted general fund from the state of Alaska's budget. If there's nothing else to come before the committee, it's 10:07 a.m., and we're adjourned.